Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border on shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Because the terrorist threat continues, the national emergency must continue on episode 141 of Media Monarchy. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, 9/12 updates, drills, and the day after. Obama, Osama, Bush, and the national emergency state. CFR, Acorn, rhetoric and race war. Intel, raids and revolution. Yes, we cannabis and blockbusted red lines. Suspicious death tolls of banksters and Blagojevich. Plus geopolitics, The Onion, and so much more. It's all here at September 18th, 2009, episode 141 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Yeah.
Arctic Monkeys, Old Yellow Bricks. And that's how we're kicking off this episode 141 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 8th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. Just some of the new arms and tentacles in the kingdom of the monarchy. Arctic Monkeys are playing in Portland tonight as part of Music Fest Northwest. And I'm trying to weasel my way into it. I'm trying to get comped. It's the kind of deal where you have to buy the pass to get to the shows and yada yada. But I would have liked to have seen Girl Talk or Explosions in the Sky or Get Up Kids or Sunny Day Real Estate or Bad Brains or Mudhoney. But if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know I'm a Britpop fan, and British bands hardly ever play here, much less bands who pretty much play stadiums overseas, and they're going to be playing a 1,000 or so seat venue tonight. And of course, I post up all my personal media adventures up on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. Such as my meeting last Sunday with Patton Oswalt, who was in town to do an expensive stand-up show, but he also did a Q&A at Cinema 21 after his new movie, Big Fan, which is excellent. If you get the chance, it's small, but if people talk it up, it might get out there. It's very good. Robert Siegel, I believe is his name. Siegel was the last name. Ex-Onion. He wrote The Wrestler. He wrote and directed Big Fan. So I got a photo and an autograph, and those photos are up on Facebook as well. But I digress about my own personal media adventures. That's not why we're here. We're here for the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, more than you'll get in just about any other show. And I gotta say, Media Monarchy is broadcast live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. I'm sitting in the seat of the mothership as we speak. Also, thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, as well as 92.3 out in Casper, Wyoming. Right now, it's 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net. Kicking in at 1 p.m. Eastern style. Also, thanks to Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, Saturday mornings at 8 Pacific Time, 98.5 The Fro. Thanks to 93.9 BoulderFreeRadio.com, as well as Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia on 87.9. Berkeley Liberation Radio.net, 104.1 in Berkeley, California. And from right here, from my man Glenn, CascadiaPublicRadio.org. And again, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org are just most of the ways you can get in touch with me for anything Media Monarchy related. Now, speaking of all those great affiliates, something that's come up, and it hit me again from a good friend who's out in Moab, Utah, who was talking about trying to get me picked up by KZMU.org out in Moab, Utah. But it's the cursing. It's Jimmy's little potty mouth. So that's kind of the wall that I've hit, and it's given me something in a way to think about if I want the show to continue to grow. Should I change how I originally do it? Wild and free? Or should I clean it up? Therefore, getting more play and getting the message out. Minus the F-bombs. I'd love to have my show played back on my old radio station, WSHC, in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. 89.7 FM. F the CC, indeed. If you have any thoughts, let me know. MediaMonarchy at gmail.com. I've run my mouth too much. There's so much to go over and get into in the world of news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Helping you look at the world and try and see the world for the shell game that it is being played before you. And you see it in the city, you go, oh, this looks good. I might be able to win this. Taking a glance at Google News this morning, September 18th, 2009. Israel assembles advanced missile defense systems. This from the Washington Post. And of course, that ties in with the other missile defense systems we're going to be talking about. We also have, again, Ahmadinejad. Amid large protests, Iran leader calls Holocaust a lie. We also, unfortunately, have a security guard shot dead this morning in an attempted ATM robbery in Dallas. More on audit the Fed and the Federal Reserve and the funny money battle. All that's up on my front page on GoogleNews.com. However, we're going to get to the real front page on MediaMonarchy.com. Change. Can you believe in this? From WhiteHouse.gov. Obama extends Bush 9/11 national emergency. Consistent with Section 202D of the National Emergencies Act 50, United States Code 1622, Section D, I am continuing for 1 year the national emergency declared on September 14, 2001 in Proclamation 7463 with respect to the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001 and the continuing and immediate threat of further attacks on the United States. Because the terrorist threat continues, the national emergency declared on September 14, 2001 and the powers and authorities adopted to deal with that emergency must continue in effect beyond September 14, 2009. Therefore, I am continuing in effect for additional year the national emergency the former president declared on September 14, 2001 with respect to the terrorist threat. This notice shall be published in the Federal Register and transmitted to the Congress. Barack Obama, the White House, September 10th, 2009. The day before the 8th anniversary of 9/11, change. Obama extends Bush's national emergency. It is all based on the lies about 9/11. Everything we're doing, everybody we're killing, everybody we're torturing, everyone we're ripping off their land, securing them away in some secret prison, not letting anyone see the photos of the things that we're doing to them, the Patriot Act, all of it. It continues under the new puppet. Now, of course, I would also direct you to this posting. So you can see the nice little animated GIF of the Bush-Obama morph from one face to the other and back again. It's kind of creepy. During last week's 9/11 anniversary episode of Media Monarchy, episode 140, in addition to the 5.5 hours of new alternative media blasted out for you last week by BeniaMonarchy.com. We had a B-side. We had the anniversary 9/11 episode. We also had a massive 2.5 hour interview with Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. Please check that interview out. Please spread the word about it. I think it really does break a lot of the bigger issues down. But what was happening last week when I was doing my live show, and again, that's why we always keep a Google News page open to see if anything happens, and things, of course, did last week. Now, the mention of the murder of an anti-abortion activist in Michigan, I haven't seen a thing about since last Friday when I was live on the show. However, the other breaking news that happened during the show We're going to get into and so much more on the 9/12 updates, drills, and the day after. It was a 9/11 anniversary scare. Shots reportedly fired, and it was reported by media. But the Coast Guard says the confusion was just a normal training exercise.
We do have breaking news out of Washington, D.C., and we want to update you on this. The U.S. Coast Guard was conducting a training exercise in the Potomac River this morning. That training exercise going on moments before the president and his motorcade crossed a nearby bridge. It caused some concern and apparently a tremendous amount of confusion, but the Coast Guard is confirming that no shots were fired as part of this training exercise. It was simply a training exercise, and you're looking at live pictures there of a Coast Guard boat there on the Potomac River. The president, of course, was traveling through Washington. This morning. He was on his way to the Pentagon, where he spoke and took place in the wreath-laying ceremony at the Pentagon Memorial. But again, the Coast Guard and police in D.C. confirming that this was, in fact, a training exercise. Pete Williams joins us now from Washington with more. Pete, I also understand that departures from Reagan National were halted shortly after 10 a.m. as a precaution. Did no one know about this?
The president had just left 9/11 ceremonies at the Pentagon, his motorcade crossing the Potomac River, as a Coast Guard security exercise unfolded on the water below. The drill involved Coast Guard fast boats patrolling a secure zone.
People seem intent on trying to violate that zone.
Soon, CNN was on the air, reporting the Coast Guard had intercepted a suspicious vessel. The cable network aired a radio transmission, carrying an ominous warning from one of the patrol boats. CNN reported 10 shots had been fired. Other news outlets picked up the story. FBI agents and police who had not been told of the Coast Guard exercise scrambled to the river fearing a 9/11 anniversary attack. Flights at Reagan National Airport were briefly stopped, but there was no attack.
No shots were fired. There was no suspect vessel. There was no criminal activity. This was a pre-planned, normal training exercise.
Coast Guard officials calling it a routine drill saw no need to put other law enforcement in the loop. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs blamed the media for triggering a frenzy, saying before we report things like this, checking would be good. CNN said in a statement two calls to the Coast Guard yielded no confirmation of an incident, but, quote, it would have been irresponsible not to report on what we were hearing and seeing. Media analyst Tom Rosensteel said the cable network made a mistake.
Yeah, there's never any benefit to being first with something that's wrong. And the net effect over time of this, I think, is damaging to the press.
Coast Guard officials ordered a review of the incident, but refused to apologize for the training they see as essential to homeland defense. Bob Moore, CBS News, Washington.
With the fallout from a security scare on the anniversary of 9/11, a Coast Guard training exercise on the Potomac River near a memorial ceremony at the Pentagon triggered confusion and some panic when it was reported on television as a potential attack. ABC's Pierre Thomas has more.
Just after 10 a.m., CNN went live with the story as a bulletin.
Breaking news right now happening in the Potomac. The Coast Guard even sent a transmission saying that they've expended 10 rounds of ammunition.
Within minutes, the story was being reported by other media.
This is breaking news right here on September 11th.
Coast Guard then firing, it was a kind of like warning shot.
The FBI and D.C. police raced to the Potomac River. At nearby Reagan National Airport, the FAA grounded all commercial flights. All this as the country remembered 9/11. President Obama had just left the Pentagon, less than a mile away. There was just one problem. CNN had been reacting to video and radio transmissions of a routine training exercise. It sounded real, but it was broadcast before any government official could tell CNN it was all fake.
I want to reemphasize that no shots were fired.
Why schedule such an exercise on 9/11 of all days around the time of memorial service?
We're going to review our own protocols, our own procedures.
A group supporting family members of 9/11 victims was outraged, suggesting the Coast Guard had been insensitive.
What happened today is inexcusable.
In a statement, CNN said it would have been irresponsible not to report what we were seeing and hearing. Frank Sesno is former chief of CNN's Washington Bureau.
There's no way around it. CNN got the information wrong. They got the information wrong because they misinterpreted what they thought was an actual incident.
For Good Morning America, Pierre Thomas, ABC News, Washington.
This was not the kind of thing 9/11 families wanted to see on the 8th anniversary of the attack. a Coast Guard training exercise on the Potomac River, just as President Barack Obama was heading for the Pentagon to help remember the nation's worst terrorist strike. One family group said the exercise caused needless alarm and was the height of irresponsibility. It didn't help that cable TV outlet CNN reported erroneously that shots had been fired. Meantime, Coast Guard officials say they did nothing wrong.
We train every day. We have crews that are highly proficient, and this is a routine exercise. I don't think that our operational commander saw any reason not to train today.
And the White House didn't disagree. Press Secretary Robert Gibbs told reporters he doesn't second-guess law enforcement in trying to keep the nation's capital safe. And he rejected comparisons to April's Air Force One training flyover of New York that cost a White House official his job. In fact, Gibbs was mostly critical of CNN for airing what it heard on Scanner. Said Gibbs, checking would be good. Mark Smith, The Associated Press, The White House.
This story is so important for so many reasons, not the least of which are the drills. This is essentially the conduit through which many of the large-scale terror attacks have happened. The events of 9/11, there were more than a dozen drills, including hijacked airplanes crashing into government building drills. On the morning of 7/7, there were drills involving the same trains and the same buses that blew up. You can see how easily a drill can flip live. If I can just speculate, if it went so far, the media started to report it was really an attack. If shots had been fired, at what point do they say, well, I guess we just have to go with this script that it's an attack, and we'll find some patsy and we'll boot him out there. In this case, it would have been some kind of homegrown errorism, as we've been prepped for. And as you heard them say in the last part of that compilation clip, and I have a whole playlist up on youtube.com/mediamonarchy, military drill causes 9/11 anniversary scare. The White House says they're okay with the Coast Guard exercise, just like they were okay with the Air Force One fiasco in April. And what all this serves to do is further scar the psyche of the public. That's what these drills now are meant to do. Ratchet up the fear, bring back the fear and terror and paranoia from 9/11. And it also gets you desensitized then to see the military doing DUI checks and all the rest of it. We have many more 8th anniversary updates, as again, last week's episode was devoted entirely to 9/11 and the official story and all the points of contention that we have. And if you don't have them, you're not paying attention? Yeah, I think that's it. A long list of updates here on the 9/12 updates, drills, and the day after. From Russia Today, and I'm constantly impressed by the work that RussiaToday.com has been doing. We're going to hit several articles and clips from them in this. First, a report on the progress made by the New York NYC CAN, the accountability, getting a new investigation on the ballot in New York to stop the 9/11 cover-up.
8 years on,
truth now,
9/11,
truth now,
9/11.
American citizens are pounding the streets, still searching for answers.
This movement's never going to stop, never.
The push for another investigation into the September 11th attacks grows larger with each passing year. Manuel Badillo's uncle died when the Twin Towers came down. He believes U.S. leaders had prior knowledge of the impending attacks, but consciously failed to act.
Why is there no justice yet? Why is there no accountability?
Badillo is among roughly 80,000 New Yorkers petitioning for a new impartial probe to answer the questions many believe state and federal officials are failing to.
The majority of family members don't believe it. The first responders don't believe what they were told by our government. All of these turned out to be lies that we've been told. 60% of the commissioners don't believe the story that they received.
Critics say the 9/11 Commission report, presented as the official version of events, failed to hold a single individual accountable for the numerous warnings leading up to, on, and after September 11th. Ted Walter is the executive director of the NYC Coalition of Accountability Now. His organization is focused on getting a referendum during this November's mayoral election to allow New Yorkers the chance to vote for a new 9/11 investigation.
And we pray and hope, but more than that, we're going to activate to make that happen and to get in touch with the folks that you know in New York that will be able to vote for this. Another great new article from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. 9/11 truth cannot be stopped. Going into the, of course, the resurgence of interest and news surrounding 9/11 because of the anniversary. He breaks down all the things that we know, all the things documented, all the things that fly in the face of the official story, whether it's Sybil Edmonds or the admissions of the 9/11 Commission themselves, that they were set up to fail. Now, again, speaking of this petition, what would a new investigation gain us? If you recall, one of the last times we got a new investigation into a large event, that was JFK and MLK, and that was the, I believe, Assassination Records Review Board, where the last official word from the United States government on the assassination of John F. Kennedy is that it was, quote, probably, unquote, the result of a conspiracy. As Van Jones backpedals, most 9/11 truth signatories stand by their call for a new investigation. That's coming from InfoWars, and that again surrounds the Fuhrer, and this led us into the anniversary. Van Jones, we should thank in a large way for bringing 9/11 truth back to the front page. Literally. But some industrious folks went to the other people on this vaunted petition, and most of them say, hell yeah, I feel the same way. And those are the kind of stories that can't get out. And those are the kind of things, such like the family members want the same thing. 9/11 Commission members doubt official story. That's from Old Thinker News. 911 reasons why 9/11 was probably an inside job. Again, from RussiaToday.com. Identity of CIA officer responsible for pre-9/11 failures, Tora Bora escape, rendition to torture revealed. This guy's name is Richard Blee, B-L-E-E. The report comes from historycommons.org, and you can run the search yourself on Richard Blee. We hit a little bit last week, but now we have a follow-up clip from ABC News on that trusted FBI informant who said the FBI threw away their chance to catch Mohammed Atta.
According to Assad, the focus on the undercover stings led the FBI to miss a chance to stop the 9/11 attacks.
Did you think you could have stopped it?
Yes.
No doubt about it in your mind.
13 years at work. Did I fail in one case? None.
In early 2001, the FBI sent Assad to infiltrate this small mosque outside Miami. Among the people he says he became suspicious of is the man he would later learn was Mohammed Atta, the 9/11 ringleader, as well as other members of his group.
You saw them?
Yes, and even I prayed in the mosque, the private mosque, and I went to certain private meetings.
And what about them made you suspicious?
It's the instinct you have inside of you. And this is what I'm good at, my job. This is my job. God gave me something, a certain gift in me.
Along with Atta at the mosque was another Al-Qaeda figure, Adnan Shibrijuma, now a fugitive with a $5 million U.S. reward on his head. Shibrijuma's father ran the mosque Assad infiltrated.
Shibrijuma was trying to invite me to his house to have coffee, tea. But I was there not to do so, not to meet with him, not to be close to him.
Who directed you to leave Shukr Jumala?
To stay away from him? The FBI?
Instead, Assad says he was assigned to set up and sting two of what he calls wannabe terrorists.
Just another data point proving that we had identified many of the hijackers ahead of time, and much like the original World Trade Center bombing in 1993, we decided to let the attack go ahead. Again, all involving informants and supposed watchlisted, flagged terrorists. More updates and an interesting question posed by LAWeekly.com. What would 9/11 be like in the age of social media? During the president's healthcare speech, the shared experience that is the real-time internet reacted to a perfect Twitter fodder event, Joe Wilson's July outburst, with a surprising amount of conversation about the real issue in the room, healthcare reform. This real-time, 24/7 net didn't exist in 01. We had the earliest versions of social media, instant messaging, and blogs, but we had nowhere near the household use of many-to-many communication channels like Twitter and text messages. For the most part, we all spent 9/11 watching CNN. And as we've just seen, how trustworthy they are when it comes to drills and terror events. The web in 09 is more about doing rather than watching. What this goes into is what we would have gotten and how things would be different. And that would be, first, video, pictures, and texts from inside the towers. We would be hit with an avalanche of videos, tweets, and pictures from office workers still trying to figure out what was going on. As reader Jim Alden puts it, 9/11 would have been a trending topic for 12 months on Twitter. 8 years ago, people didn't go around carrying a video camera in their pocket, much less an iPhone. Passengers on United 93 used their cell phones to call their friends and family. Oh, which they give a link to debunk911myths.org. So this is decidedly not a truther column. Unless I'm misreading this website. How are they using debunk? Who's debunking what? It doesn't matter. In 2009, Virgin America has Wi-Fi. We would very likely get video clips from iPhoners on board, maybe even a live video stream. We would have more myths, but quicker myth busting, just like the Jeff Goldblum is dead tweets on the day Michael Jackson died. With big news comes fake news. But compared to the persistent rumors that the Pentagon was hit by a missile or that 93 was tailed by a fighter plane that shot it down, we'd have an instant internet response to every rumor and misinformation dispelled by primary sources and citizen journalists on the scene. And fourth, we would have more opinions. And again, they go into CNN. And that again reminds me of who's referred to as the Harley shirt guy on 9/11. The guy who seems like an actor that some have pointed to be a specific actor. Who came out, and if you watch the clip, 9/11 Harley shirt guy, Harley like Harley Davidson. And watch this guy read a script. You know in your gut, it's false. Utah City pays tribute to 9/11 with a citywide emergency drill. New York subways still vulnerable 8 years after 9/11. That's a video by way of ABC and Raw Replay. And interestingly enough, on the 9/11 anniversary, the stock market closed at the exact same level. Aaron Dykes over at InfoWars notes that FDR famously said that, quote, in politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. AP and Forbes and CNN money all go into it. That essentially, the stock market has only hit this number three times in I'm not sure how many decades. Just like, of course, the New York Lotto on the one-year anniversary of 9/11 being 9-1-1. It's possible. Could also be sinister forces. a few more updates, and again, returning to RussiaToday.com, 9/11 family member Manny Badillo, schools France 24 TV.
Who are you saying is behind the attacks?
Well, that's what that's why this event, this mass murder, this unsolved crime begs for a new investigation. We have to find out what happened. At the very least, there's a grand cover-up. At the very most, this was criminal elements within the United States government and foreign governments and corporate entities that managed to rig those buildings and take them down. This is where the evidence points. The evidence does not point to right, what the U.S. government is trying to condition us to believe.
Can I put it to you, though, that in the last 8 years, there hasn't been a terror attack in the United States? Many people say that the war in Iraq was the wrong thing to do, but that the war in Afghanistan, as President Obama says, is the right theater for the so-called war on terror. Would you not say that the fact that there's been no terror attacks in the last 8 years means that the U.S. administration is, at least now, on the right path?
You know, it could also mean that there was no real threat to begin with. We're in Afghanistan right now, and we're bombing innocent Muslim families. We're demonizing them throughout our media. What we find is, in Afghanistan, not only is there an oil pipeline that's supposed to be built through there, but we find a tremendous wealth of natural resources, including opium fields, okay? Last year had the largest opium crop in the history of Afghanistan, and this is when NATO is there. I mean, what's going on? We know the CIA has been bringing drugs into this country, the United States, for the past 5 decades. So now we have NATO and U.S. forces in control, supposedly, of Afghanistan, but yet the poppy field crop is the largest ever been.
Mr. Badillo, many thanks indeed for joining us. I'm afraid we will have to leave it there. Well, that's it for tonight's focus. We'd like to remind you that any views given by our correspondents or our guests are not, of course, the views of Hans van Katte.
Oh, they couldn't wait to get him off of there. And, of course, busted out the disclaimer there at the end. And there he was, Manny Badillo, rocking not only 9/11 truth, but just general political truth. With the drug running and the false flags and all of that. GlobalResearch.ca, again, sign a petition, join the appeal for truth about 9/11. And one more clip, at least concerning 9/11 and its anniversary. We're going to go into the protest at Ground Zero on the 8th anniversary.
Could this be a revolution? On the anniversary of September 11th, protesters fought to get their message across.
9/11, right? The day of lost power. It's 9/11, the day we lost power. Welcome to America in the darkest hour. Stranglehold this country by our tyrants and cowards.
9/11 truth seekers from all over the U.S. flocked to the streets of New York. Come rain or shine, they say their struggle will never end while Americans continue to be fed lies.
There's no better blindfold than a flood.
They want a new unbiased investigation into the biggest tragedy in modern American history. But critics call them conspiracy theorists and don't want to hear their views.
It's a tragedy what's happening to us, our country. I'm young and I've realized this. It's weird that all these people, older generations, they're like too in love with their country to realize what they're doing to them.
Authorities didn't allow protesters to use megaphones, but their voice was still very loud and clear.
Do your own research!
They say America's fear-based politics need to end, as well as alleged cover-ups, both inside the government and the American mainstream media.
Wake up! While you still can! We can still take it back! If you would only wake up!
This man says he's being wiretapped for his belief that the government orchestrated 9/11 to get into false flag operations.
They surveil people who speak out in this government by tapping their phones. My phones and my emails have been tapped for years.
The 9/11 truth movement says too many things just don't add up.
Two planes, rebuilding, do the math.
Building 7 was not hit by a plane on 9/11, but it still came down like a plastic controlled demolition.
It's been almost 3,000 days since the events of September 11th shook America. The number is symbolic. Over 3,000 people died that day. Since then, these people have been walking out onto the streets demanding answers to the tough questions. They say they still haven't gotten any responses from the government. Some authorities, however, are beginning to wonder.
How do you go back and check it out? You know, where do you start? Who do you believe? That's the hardest thing.
8 years on, many are still struggling to understand what happened on the fateful day.
Two players!
he's brought down three buildings!
But these people say they're not stopping until all of the truth is revealed. Anastasia Churkina, RT, New York.
Who do you believe? I would say don't believe anybody but yourself and your gut. Or your lying eyes. Oh, but it kept spilling out all through the weekend. But on Sunday, September 13th, 2 days late and a dollar short, day late and a dollar short, another new message from Osama. Osama reportedly calls Obama powerless as the CIA-linked Intel Center releases another highly suspicious bin Laden tape. More on that from Paul Joseph Watson, but let's just get the straight garbage from the Associated Press. In a tape released Sunday by Al-Qaeda's media wing, terrorist leader Osama bin Laden said President Barack Obama's powerless to stop the war in Afghanistan. Of course he is. He wants to surge it and build it. It's the right war. Site Intelligence Group, S-I-T-E, a terrorist monitoring firm that translated the address, said bin Laden, whose Al-Qaeda organization was behind the September 11th attacks, in case you forgot, blamed the war on the pro-Israel lobby and corporate interests. You lie! Intel Center, another company that monitors terrorist propaganda, said the 11-minute video shows a still picture of bin Laden while audio of the address plays. Bin Laden's address to the American people came 2 days after the 8th anniversary of 9/11. He typically addresses the U.S. in a message around the 9/11 anniversary. But apparently he's just not doing so well. He just can't get his new records out on time. The purpose of his address Sunday, bin Laden said in the site translation, and again, thanks to Rita Katz, we've gone into them and we'll mention a little bit more here in just a moment, but quote, to remind you of the causes of 9/11, chiefly your support to your Israeli allies who occupy our land of Palestine. So even if this guy's real, even if he's still alive, even if he really did 9/11, which of course FBI.gov on his most wanted poster doesn't say anything about 9/11, because they have, quote, no hard evidence connecting him to 9/11. FBI.gov. Go read it. If we took all of this as true, he even says, and this is something that Ron Paul would talk about, not being a truther himself. Well, if we just listen to what he said, that's why these things are happening. Bin Laden argued against the claims that the war is necessary for U.S. security, saying current White House officials are merely following the strategy of former President George W. Bush and former Vice President Dick Cheney to, quote, promote the previous policies of fear to market the interests of big companies. When Obama became president and retained many of the Bush administration's military leaders, such as Defense Secretary Gates, reasonable people knew that Obama is a powerless man who will not be able to end the war as he promised. If you end the war, so to it. But if it is otherwise, all we will do is continue the war of attrition against you on all possible axes.
In a tape released just days after the 8th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden describes President Barack Obama as powerless to stop the war in Afghanistan. The tape, which was translated by both the Associated Press and Site Intelligence Group, says the current White House is following the same strategy of former President George W. Bush. Along with direct threats, bin Laden follows an approach he's used in earlier tapes, reaching out to Americans if the U.S. moves to reevaluate its support for Israel. The Al-Qaeda leader, who is believed to be living in the modernist region between Afghanistan and Pakistan, typically addresses the American people in a message timed around September 11th. The tape, which is 11 minutes long, only shows a picture of bin Laden with his voice in the background. Intel Center, a group that monitors terrorist propaganda, says this is the 49th tape released this year by Al-Qaeda's media wing. Brian Thomas, The Associated Press.
Gosh, I guess his webcam isn't working. He can just do audio slideshow. Flashback's Suspicious Sight to release another Bin Laden tape. That's back in November 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com. However, it's worth mentioning yet again, this goes back to September 12th, 2007. Digital forensics expert on Osama video. Definite fake. Neil Krawetz, K-R-A-W-E-T-Z of Hector Factor, an expert on digital image forensics, said in one of his latest blogs that the video contained many visuals and audio splices and that all of the modifications were of very low quality. Something he goes on to mention, and I'm not sure if it's in this report, this coming from newsbusters.org after all, but Truth News and Paul Joseph Watson and Prison Planet and InfoWars and all those guys have gone into Neil Krawetz basically saying these videos look cobbled together and the Intel Center logo was laid on the same time the media Al-Qaeda As-Sahab logo was laid on. Looking at the digital overlays, essentially layers, like if you were in Photoshop. For whatever reason, Mr. Neil Krawetz then came out and recanted. Now, how you do a whole interview and blog post and say this whole thing is a bunch of fake garbage and then go, oh, wait, no, it's real. I don't know how one comes to that conclusion without some kind of coercion. From Osama to Obama. Let's get a little bit more change. First, we had, of course, the continuation of the national emergency, which essentially gives the decider-in-chief, whoever it is this 4 years, whatever puppet it is from banksters and the globalists, whether they're funded by conservative Texans and Saudi oil interests or Goldman Sachs bankers, it makes no difference. It's just the mask they wear to fool you every 4 years. And boy, they pulled a fast one this last November. I've been mentioning it as being slick Madison Avenue propaganda, so I'll make the side reference that I've been watching the first season of the much ballyhooed AMC original TV series Mad Men. And it's very well done. It's very classy. The fact that it's not on HBO and that it's not, you know, filled with all the HBO things like cursing and boobies, it gives it a classier feel because it's not stuffed with all that stuff. Not that I have any problem with profanity and boobies. I enjoy them both. All three of them. Slick Madison Avenue propaganda. You're soaking in it. Obama pushes renewal of warrantless spying on Americans. This from Paul Joseph Watson, and we source to Threat Level and the Washington Post and the Associated Press and the Huffington Post and Prison Planet and on and on and on. President Barack Obama has once again betrayed his promise to restore liberties eviscerated by the Bush regime by pushing Congress to renew Patriot Act provisions that allow for warrantless spying on American citizens, even in cases where there is no link to terrorism whatsoever. According to a Wired News report, the Obama administration has told Congress it supports renewing three provisions of the Patriot Act due to expire at the year's end, measures making it easier for the government to spy within the United States. Obama's support for the provision should come as very little surprise because he first voted for warrantless wiretapping of Americans in 08 when he was still an Illinois senator and before Blagojevich tried to sell his Senate seat. More on that later. He was also lending support for immunizing the telecom companies from lawsuits charging them with being complicit in the Bush administration's wiretapping program. One of the provisions Obama's pushing to renew is the so-called lone wolf provision. Enacted in 2004, it allows for the electronic monitoring of an individual without the government having to prove that the case has any relation whatsoever to terrorism or a foreign power. That means you don't have to be an Al-Qaeda member. This is, in effect, a carte blanche for the government to use every method at their disposal to spy on any American citizen they choose. If you recall, my friends, especially if you've finally broken through your hopenosis, that Obama swept into office on a mandate of change and a commitment to restore liberties that were eviscerated under the Bush regime. Despite promising to do so, he has failed completely to overturn Bush signing statements and executive orders that, according to Obama, trampled on liberties, end quote. Indeed, despite promising to end the use of signing statements, he has continued to use them. Obama has failed to close Guantanamo Bay or any other CIA torture black site, as he promised to do. Obama has failed in his promise to reject the Military Commissions Act and instead has supported the use of military commissions. Obama has continued to allow the rendition of torture of detainees while protecting Bush administration officials who ordered torture, protecting them from prosecution, and blocking the release of evidence related to torture. Obama has gone even further than Bush in introducing preventative detention of detainees, ensuring people could never get a trial. In restating his support for warrantless wiretapping of American citizens, Obama has once again proven that his promise of change was nothing more than a hollow and deceptive political platitude to ensure his election. Since he took office, Obama has betrayed almost every promise he made and effectively become nothing more than the third term of the Bush administration.
Hi, this is Jessalyn Radek of the Government Accountability Project, and we just learned this week that President Obama is planning on extending three provisions of the Patriot Act, or one might call it the Unpatriotic Act, which are due to expire in December. These three provisions deal with roving wiretaps, business records, and lone wolf provisions. The problem right now with the roving wiretaps under the current Patriot Act are that they are John Doe roving wiretaps, not necessarily connected to any person or any particular phone, which could easily target phones of innocent Americans. The problem with business records is that it's not only business records, it's your library records and it's your credit history. And there are no kind of minimization procedures to leave out information that the government over collects and or collects on people who have no connection to terrorism whatsoever. And the lone wolf provision sounds like something out of Little Red Riding Hood, but really, this has never been used, and probably for a good reason should not be used, because it would target people who are out there acting on their own without having any connection whatsoever to a foreign government or a terrorist organization. So you could have any black helicopter tinfoiler person out there who's mad at the government, but otherwise completely harmless, who gets targeted. President Obama, back when he was a candidate, said that he had to go along with the Patriot Act and kind of gave a wink and a nod that, this needed to be done to get elected. I understand that. But he promised that once in office, he would give it a careful, meaningful review and would bring his constitutional expertise to bear. This extension of these three horrendous provisions is not doing that. Luckily, Senators Durbin and Feingold are supposed to drop a bill tomorrow that would help rectify a lot of the problems with these provisions, so I urge your support for that. Thanks.
And I'm sure our good friends in Congress will really halt the renewal of these key Patriot Act provisions. So that video's embedded up, pretty much breaks it down, except for her stupid little comment about black helicopters and tinfoil hats. So we all know black helicopters don't exist. They haven't been documented on MediaMonarchy.com over the last couple years, performing terror drills over Portland, Oregon, or Denver, Colorado, or New Orleans, Louisiana, or Washington, D.C. Sidebar note, there's a comment at the bottom of this post from my man Steve from here in Portland, Oregon. He's become a fan of the show and of the website, and I appreciate all his kind words. Got to meet him at the Ground Zero Lounge here in Portland, Oregon, for Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge. Again, also available on ZeroPointRadio.com, as well as the great chat room. So, hat tip and welcome aboard to my man Steve, who is also in a band called Strange Letter, and you can check it at StrangeLetter.net. Moving on, however, into the latest updates on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. It's an ugly list of headlines dealing with, among other things, the Council on Foreign Relations, ACORN, rhetoric, and race war. First, from the Washington Post, Obama calls on young adults to back health care reform. This basically paints him as knowing that the support among mainline middle-aged middle America is pretty much gone. He's going to 18-year-olds for support. To the Obama youth, if you will. And they can't wait to join the civilian National Security Force. A note from CNSNews.com. Washington Post ignores their own poll finding that shows that 54% of people polled say the more they learn of Obamacare, the less they like it. Race creeps into U.S. healthcare debate. That's from Reuters. And that should come as no surprise, along with all the strange developments in the cyberspace war world. Coming with Obama is also everybody's top card on their deck is the race card. An interesting question from PsychologyToday.com, although I'm loath to give them a link, since they, of course, posted an article recently about conspiracy theorists being crazy, insane. You're insane. If you want to know what the 9/11 whistleblowers are talking about, you're crazy. You're nuts. And because they're Psychology Today, they can call you that. Who took the picture of Joe Uli Wilson and how? They're asking the question. There seems to be such a great posed shot for some event that was supposedly not premeditated. An interesting question. However, in the race from race, Democrats rebut Jimmy Carter saying that Joe Wilson is racist. So Jimmy Carter ratchets up the debate and the regular Dems go, hey, whoa, hey, easy, whoa there. Taking count of Obama's czars, lawmakers rise up. That's from the LA Times, and we'll just see how high they rise. Obama names another globalist with tax problems to his administration. The IMF's Charles Collins has been appointed to a Department of Treasury post. Obama last Monday named International Monetary Fund Deputy Research Director Charles Collins, that's C-O-L-L-Y-N-S, as the U.S. Treasury's new Assistant Secretary for International Finance. As the number two official in the Treasury's International Affairs section, Collins will be responsible for representing the Treasury's interest among multilateral financial institutions such as the IMF, World Bank, and International Development Banks. Again, their constituents, their base, the banksters, the IMF, the World Bank. Charles Collins will report to the nominee for Undersecretary for International Affairs, Lael Brainard, whose nomination is still being vetted via the Senate Finance Committee. The Wall Street Journal reported last week that a nomination hearing for Brainard was being held up by an inquiry regarding her personal taxes. A spokeswoman for the panel's ranking Republican, Senator Charles Grassley, declined to confirm a tax inquiry and said only that the vetting process was still underway. Political debate over health care reform has diverted the committee's attention and resources away from nomination hearings. So I guess this was slightly misleading. It's not Charles Collins who has the tax problems. It's Lael Brainard. Well, so one's got tax problems and the other one's coming from the IMF. So you're pretty much screwed coming and going. The House votes to end federal funding for Acorn. We've got reports from the Washington Post as well as the Washington Times. House joined Senate in cutting Acorn funding. The House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly Thursday to end all federal funding for the liberal community activist group Acorn. The latest blow to the embattled organization since videos surfaced last week that showed its workers counseling a supposed prostitute on how to cheat on taxes and loan applications. I believe some of those videos that came out basically had folks proposing the most ridiculous things they could think of. And the Acorn folks were all about it. Foundation-funded left cover. Essentially, kids, that's how fascism works. It's not top-down. It's from the bottom up. It's the recruitment of folks like you. But hopefully not you. U.S. seeking a third delay on Guantanamo cases. Gee, we just mentioned something about that a minute ago, didn't we? The Obama administration said it would decide by mid-November whether to bring charges in federal court in the U.S. against five detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And those guys are accused of involvement in 9/11. Captain Connie Rhodes asks for Judge Clay Land to reconsider. What does all this mean? Well, let's go to the Ledger Inquirer. Army Captain Connie Rhodes, who unsuccessfully petitioned a federal court to stop her deployment to Iraq by arguing Obama can't legitimately hold the office, has asked U.S. District Court Judge Clay Land to reconsider his Wednesday ruling. The emergency request for stay of deployment and request to amend the judgment was filed Thursday on behalf of Rhodes by attorney Orly Tates, a national figure in the birther movement. And as have we documented and gone into quite well in weeks past here, Orly Tates, for whatever the birther issue is, I call it a huge black hole distraction. Someone like Orly Tates is completely without any credibility. If you watch any of her clips or any of her videos, she's a wrecker. She's meant to get out in front and screw the whole thing up. Alex Constantine going further into it, Orly Tates and the birthers falling down into the rabbit hole. We do have a video of AIPAC's number one target in his first post-jail interview, and I believe it's with Greta Van Susteren, but it's James Trafficant. If you recall, a couple weeks ago, we went over his recent release from prison and played a quick clip of some of his greatest hits, speaking before his hearing. The CFR says, that's the Council on Foreign Relations. You should learn about them if you don't know about them. CFR. They say what we've all said many, many times, and let's again jump to CorbettReport.com. In the latest podcast from Foreign Affairs, the public face of the Council on Foreign Relations, Gideon Rose and Robert McMahon discuss the differences in the foreign policy of Bush and Obama, concluding, quote, there's a lot of rhetoric, but it's usually more about America and its ideals and what we want to be seen to be doing rather than the actual impact of our operations. There's a lot of rhetoric. But that's the only difference in the current puppet and the previous puppet. So that's another great article from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. We wrote back and forth about that article, as I note that I subscribe to all those Council on Foreign Relations podcasts and video podcasts, because it's a great way to keep up with the enemy. And with that, I should tell you, my friends, that we're now into hour number two of episode 141 of Media Monarchy. It's September 18th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org. Another note on the Council on Foreign Relations, this time from normantranscript.com. This comes under an article called Agriculture Secretary Bullish on Rural America. As part of a rural tour of America assigned to him by Obama, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, Council on Foreign Relations member, former governor of Iowa, and a lawyer. So he's just trustworthy on a multitude of levels. He's going through rural America doing his all shucks thing. We need to pull up our bootstraps and farmers will be okay, even though there's the systematic destruction of all things natural. If we jump down a little bit, Vilsack, asked about climate change, said he believes it is happening and spoke of a visit to Colorado where the catastrophic destruction of lodgepole pine trees is due to a beetle that kills trees. Huh? Vilsack pointed to warmer temperatures in North America not killing off the beetles, as was the case before warmer temp, blah, blah, blah. Asked about emissions trading, or cap and trade, and its effect on Oklahoma's agricultural economy, Vilsack noted having taken part in a recent climate change task force project with the Council on Foreign Relations. We, again, have noted many, many times the somewhat hidden agenda of the Council on Foreign Relations and the geoengineering agenda. We went into that on the previous B-side up on cyberspacewar.com, going into the U.S. Navy's experimentation of launching rockets into the skies to create artificial cloud formations. Former Interior Secretary Gail Norton is the focus of a corruption probe. The Justice Department investigation centers on a 2006 decision to award oil shale leases in Colorado to a Royal Dutch Shell subsidiary. Months later, the oil giant hired Norton as a legal counsel. Lastly, on the Obamasiah and the Apostles of War update, CFR Acorn Rhetoric and Race War, Obama's cousin Dick Cheney is going to be undergoing spinal surgery. This from the Washington Times. Now, we lump left and right and all the Congress critters together under whatever current puppet regime we have. So I just call it Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, whether it's Obama or Cheney or Norton or Vilsack or Sebelius or Foley or God knows what. Phony left-right paradigm, breaking it down. We are nonpartisan on MediaMonarchy.com. Both sides completely blackmailable and corruptible. And they do not have your best interests at heart. Maybe not all of them, maybe not every single one of them. But I bet if you actually looked at what your local rep is for, you'll be disturbed. I'm not sure I've found a thing yet that Earl Blumenauer is for that I'm for, and I haven't found anything that I'm for that he isn't against. The bike thing is the best thing Blumenauer's got going for him. Audit the Fed, in the war, any of that stuff, and yeah, he's not for it. Just like most of the rest of the fake progressive Democrats. They're all right with the right war. What does all this get us? Where does all this bring us? We went over all the 9/11 updates, the 9/12 updates, and the Coast Guard drills. And we go over the military drills and exercises many, many times on MediaMonarchy.com, as I've already told you why. We go over them for as many reasons as the drills themselves are being run, for a multitude of reasons. We've been soaking in something called Vigilant Guard for quite some time, and under that banner of Vigilant Guard, right now, FEMA and NORTHCOM, I realize I have a typo, but it's somewhat appropriate I called them NORTHCON.
Maybe I'll fix that. Maybe I won't. FEMA and NORTHCOM run vigilant guard drills from Montana on September 15th through the 18th. So that's supposedly ending today and going to publicintelligence.net. From September 15th through the 18th, the Montana National Guard will be performing a joint exercise with FEMA and NORTHCOM to help coordinate emergency response to natural and man-made disasters. The exercise is one of many regional Vigilant Guard exercises being held by the National Guard this year. The Puerto Rico National Guard just finished its Vigilant Guard exercise, rather, back in March it finished. And another round of exercises in Iowa ended in June. These Vigilant Guard exercises are part of a larger national-level program called Ardent Century. Ardent Century is conducted by NORTHCOM and NORAD, and its major venues include not only the Vigilant Guard exercises, but also Amalgam DART, involving air defense activities at Camp Relea in Oregon. And also a nuclear weapons incident exercise with a U.S. Air Force response near Cheyenne, Wyoming. FEMA, NORTHCOM, NORAD, the FAA, the military, all these guys involved in the drills that we saw on 9/11. As we went over the mistaken drill from the Coast Guard on 9/11/09, we see how the drills roll. If I'm not explaining myself well enough, I would recommend checking out Webster Tarpley's work on the drills on the morning of 9/11. Even though Richard Myers, when grilled by Cynthia McKinney, said that the confluence of drills actually made the response of 9/11 better than it would have been. Shudder to think what that would mean. Tarpley's work on the drills, Greg Nixon, ex of dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. He stopped updating the site, but it is still there. Delve into the world of the private military contractors and the military exercises and the drills, and you will be afraid at first. But then once you start to watch it, once you start to see it, and again, that's why we do this whole thing. Am I saving the world? Hell no. Am I trying to arm you with a little bit of info for when something maybe goes down, you won't be so surprised? Hopefully. So the Vigilant Guard drills aren't the last of what's going on, and I'm sure there's more coming up, and we'll go over those as we hit them, and I'm sure there's even a few more headlines still yet to come in this episode 141 of MediaMonarchy.com. So that's FEMA and NORTHCOM running Vigilant Guard drills in Montana, supposedly ending today. This leads us perfectly into Police State International Intel Drills, Raids, and Revolution. As the site has gotten overstuffed, as everything accelerates, I was even just talking to a truck driver who brings the freight to my job when we were marking the manifest, putting our initials on it, and every time you write the date, you go, God, it's already September. So things are flying. He said, yeah, things are flying. Things are really sped up. Things have really seemed to speed up since 9/11, he said. And I agreed with a knowing smile. Perhaps, hopefully, that maybe's opened the door for further discussions. But we'll see. And I digress. When I say Police State International, and as I've started to basically bunch a lot of the news stories and headlines, because I can't flesh it all out, I can't post these articles up with full text. There's no way, there's no room, there's no time. I'm relying on you to see the headlines and to data mine and to scan for the info and get it and follow it and further explore it. So when I say Police State International or Police State in general, that I generally take that to be things they're doing to us in an encroaching police state. And it's going to be ugly. Police State International, Intel, Drills, Raids, and Revolution. First, articles, as well as audio and video reports on the sonic crowd control weapons being deployed at town hall meetings.
The sheriff's department went on the defensive today about a new sonic weapon. We showed you the long-range acoustic device, or LRAD, yesterday on 10 News. Now, it's a technology used in Iraq to control insurgents, and now it's being used by the San Diego Sheriff's Department. Today, 10 News reporter Ariana Duarte spoke with the Sheriff's Department to find out exactly how that LRAD will be used. Ariana?
Well, Steve, there was a lot of concern over whether the LRAD would be dangerous and if it would be used the way it is in war zones. We asked the Sheriff's Department, and here's what they have to say.
Please clear the street and the event area.
The Sheriff's Department rolled out their new sonic weapon today, one day after a 10 News report raised questions about the device called the LRAD. They're used to repel terrorists in Iraq, and now they're in the hands of the San Diego Sheriff's Department.
As you turn the volume up, of course, it's going to get much louder.
The device was originally made to be used for war, emitting high-pitched sounds as a form of crowd control. Monday, members of the ACLU spoke with 10 News, outraged that local law enforcement now had the device and that they brought it to recent town hall meetings in case things got out of hand.
We think that local law enforcement shouldn't be using military-style weaponry like that.
But today, the Sheriff's Department told 10 News that it's only being used for good, like helping search and rescue and warning people during fires or floods.
So will it never be used in San Diego as a weapon?
No, not by the Sheriff's Department.
And that's a guarantee?
Yes.
San Diego Sheriff Bill Gore was recently quoted saying the LRAD was purchased for events should there be any problems, adding we could use the LRAD in place of pepper spray. We asked the Sheriff's Department about the comment, and they told us it was probably just a poor choice of words and insisted the device is only here to help.
And if the issue is getting the message out to the people that need to hear it, then this is the device to do it.
So is it used to startle them?
No.
So how is it comparable to pepper spray?
I don't know that I would make that comparison.
The LRAD cost the Sheriff's Department $27,000. It was paid for with money from the 2007 Homeland Security Grant. Ariana Duarte, 10 News.
Another simple local news report that yet contains all of the pivotal pieces of information that we're talking about when we talk about the police state. What they seem to say over and over again for the first minute and a half of that report is, this was for Iraq, now it's for you. This was for a war zone, now it's for you. The PR effect. We'll only be using it for crowd control events, traffic, DUIs, PR events that shows the military performing public service. Generally, again, always in violation of posse comitatus, the Civil War law that prohibits the military from performing law enforcement duties, stomped all over. And you heard the guy say, so you won't use this as a weapon? No. Is that a guarantee? Yeah, the Sheriff's Department will never use it. Oh, wait, there's the catch, my friends. Boss Hogg won't use it himself. However, when the feds come in and take over, as is completely allowed and documented, John Warner Defense Authorization Act, Governor of West Virginia Joe Manchin, as well as many other governors, I believe also from Vermont and the Governors Association, written letters to the president saying, you've taken away the power of the state governors to declare national emergency. The commander-in-chief can decide when or when not to send in the military. So he says, the Sheriff's Department won't use this. It'll be when the feds or the private military contractors like Blackwater or Z come in. So it's all there in that report, quite simply. Sonic crowd control weapons being deployed at town hall meetings. It was for Iraq, now it's for you. That's what all this was. They said it's just for the terrorists. It's always meant for us. Since they blew the dust off the Patriot Act and rushed it through Congress, it was already written. They were just waiting for an event. From the Associated Press, vampire cops say syringes will help stop drunk driving by taking blood. We've been noting this story. It's been happening more and more in the last year that essentially, oh, you don't want a breathalyzer? How about I take your blood right now forcibly? Originally, this was being fought against. Originally, hospitals were saying, we won't take this as evidence. We won't be a part of this. But just as Emmanuel Goldstein mentioned a little bit ago, that if we want to continue this war of terror, they'll just continue the war of attrition. The war of attrition is also being waged against us, breaking down whatever little resistance we had left anyway. They just keep coming back. Even when they say they're going to stop something, you know, it's just going to pop back up whack-a-mole style. Maybe with a new name, maybe with a new coat of paint, whether it's the Cybersecurity Act that still gives the president the on-off switch, or whether it's this vaunted missile defense system that now Obama says is off the table. Two steps forward, one step back. And yet again, I digress. New York homes raided in terror probe. We've got reports from the Washington Post as well as the New York Times. But let's jump to the New York Daily News. FBI unit set for more anti-terror raids in Queens, and even a Colorado home was raided. Now, this article starts with a nice photograph of the elite FBI hostage rescue team poised to make more anti-terror raids as they sit flying in a black helicopter. FBI agents with bomb-sniffing dogs Wednesday raided the Colorado apartment of an Afghan national linked to Al-Qaeda in a plot to attack the New York subway system. Simultaneously, authorities swarmed over a nearby home believed to belong to a relative of Najibullah Zazi, Z-A-Z-I, hauling out boxes of evidence. And Zazi, 25, met with investigators at FBI headquarters in Denver and provided a DNA sample, a fingerprint, and writing samples. My client is not involved in any terror plot. He answered every question they had. The searches in Aurora, Colorado came as the NYPD and an elite FBI team poised for additional raids in Queens in a hunt for bomb-making materials. Earlier, Queens raids turned up 9 knapsacks and cell phones, raising concerns about bombers detonating simultaneous blasts as they did in the 2004 attacks that killed 191 commuters in Spain. That would be on 3/11/2004. 911 days after 9/11. Somebody likes their numbers. I'm not sure if it's Al Qaeda or not. Queens raid prompts alert on homemade explosives. That's the New York Times article. Watch out, homegrown errorism. Army.mil goes into the task force born on 9/11, still guards New York. But on a different note, and again, multiple links to support the bad news. First from Raw Story, police to get access to classified military intelligence. In a move raising eyebrows among civil liberties advocates, the Department of Homeland Security announced Monday that it would give so-called local and state fusion centers access to classified military intel in the Pentagon databases. Side note about Al-Qaeda, of course, Al-Qaeda literally means the base, as in the database of Mujahideen terrorists we used to fund in the proxy war against the Soviets in the 70s in Afghanistan. Fusion centers are hubs for local law enforcement, the private sector, and intel community, and were created in an effort to fight terrorism. There are more than 70 known centers across the U.S. The decision to give fusion centers access to classified intel appears to be a shift in policy by Homeland Stupidity. In July, Secretary Janet Napolitano said, quote, that fusion centers were not intended to have a military presence and that she was not aware of ones that did, according to the New York Times. The centers have been a flashpoint of criticism from civil liberties groups. The ACLU, in particular, has been a vehement critic. Thankfully. DOD announces new info access to fusion centers. That's from defenselink.mil. DOD opens some classified info to non-federal officials. That's from federalcomputerweek.com. But on a different, although not entirely unrelated note, from Press TV, as well as around the world, but again, when you want to get the dirt, you sometimes have to go to the foreign press, even in this case, if it's the state media of Iran. The head of U.S. Intel has disclosed for the first time the overall cost of Washington's spending on intelligence in 1 year. Director of National Intelligence Dennis Blair, a member of the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, said Tuesday that the U.S. spends $75 billion a year on intelligence. As we've noted before, we can put a man on the moon, but we can't put a man in an apartment. We can launch sophisticated drone attacks. However, we can't shoot a guy a banana, like Bill Hicks said. If they wanted to help the world, they could. They could do it overnight with the same shock and awe that we saw when we used to kill people. They don't want to do it. They don't care about you. Pittsburgh City Council delays giving police new powers for the upcoming G20 meeting. Yes, of course, we're hosting the upcoming Group of 20 meeting where all the local and international banksters, gangsters, puppet leaders, patsies, frontmen, big oil, big pharma, big business. This is all going to land in our lap in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh City Council balked at giving final approval to legislation that could give police new powers in advance of anticipated G20 summit protests, putting the matter off until the next day. This being the 15th and 16th of September, I do not know the update on this story. I'm sure that the armed thugs will be allowed to do whatever they want to do. And make sure we go on record right now and say, watch for provocateured violence in the protests. Again, watch for foundation-funded, quote-unquote, anarchists. Perhaps shepherded, trained, let in, let out by Delta Force, involved in the battle for Seattle, smashing those Starbucks windows. Or like all the other protests, when we see the feds dress up like protesters to start violence, it's just another example of a false flag attack, flying the flag of someone else to pull an attack so you can blame them for it. Uncle Scam eyes vehicle tracking tax. This from a site that I had never seen before, but I approve. It's called thetruthaboutcars.com. A member of Congress proposes to use taxpayer money to fund the development of technology to track motors as part of a new form of taxation. I wonder who this is. U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer, Democrat of Oregon, introduced H.R. 3311 earlier this year to appropriate $154 million for research and study into the transition to a per-mile vehicle tax system. The Road User Fee Pilot Project would be administered by the U.S. Treasury Department, appropriately enough. We've covered that story on Media Monarchy many times. And again, in another unfortunate way, Oregon leads the nation. We mentioned last week the upcoming drills that Canada is going to run in Washington, D.C., where they were going to set off bombs in downtown D.C. That didn't really go over so well. This update is from 6 days ago. Canadian scaleback planned military demo in D.C., a planned Canadian military demonstration that would have included simulated bomb blasts within blocks of the White House and the Capitol. It's been scaled back after media reports focused on the explosive elements. So that should be fairly instructive. If you get informed and you get activated about what's being shoved down our throats, the bastards back down. The Canadian embassy had planned to simulate the detonation of an improvised explosive device several times over 2 days, starting September 23rd, to demonstrate what life is like in war-torn Afghanistan and how Canadian forces there respond with medical help. Again, poor Canada, poor Australia, following the U.S. down the hole of the war of terror. Canada's probably no place to run away to anymore. From WHEC.com, as well as a little raw video for you, and a warning to people in Greece, New York, your town is not under attack. don't be alarmed by what you might have seen on the morning of 9/11. Your town was not under attack, we're not sure. There's not a lot of people that know about this, but soldiers landed in the town. It was a military exercise by the 401st Civil Affairs Battalion, the Army Reserve Unit based in Webster, New York. Warning, 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 this is not an attack, this is not an assault. Lay down, GI. North Carolina Marines train for terrorism. Click the link to Haven News or havenews.com. It's from Havelock, North Carolina. That's Hevelock. And it's havenews.com. And you can see a nice photo of those North Carolina Marines training for terrorism. Disaster drill involves hundreds. That's from DeseretNews.com. Butte participates in earthquake drill. This is from MontanaNewsStation.com.
Black Hawk medical helicopters barged into Butte, swinging in from the north just before 11 a.m. as the National Guard choppers touched down on Sinners Field next to St. James Healthcare. Medical personnel and ambulance crews stood by. It's all part of an exercise to ready Montana's emergency responders for a major earthquake. The largest part of that drill, as reported, taking part in Helena, the epicenter of the simulated disaster, with mock victims brought to Butte to test responses and treatment facilities in the mining city. But it doesn't stop when the choppers are unloaded.
They've been taken into the emergency room. They'll be triaged there once they arrive there, and then depending on their level of care needed, they'll either be taken care of in the emergency room or go to surgery or wherever they need to go to.
Doyle says he's impressed with the preparedness of emergency workers in Butte, is saying the hospital staff is doing a great job handling several emergency drills this summer.
Did they say black helicopters? God, I thought those things didn't exist. I already told you that. More drills. We mentioned Northcom before, but did you know about Southcom? Southern Seas 2009 is a six-month, that's April through October, naval deployment to the Caribbean and Central and South America. As part of these drills running through October, is also something called Panamax. So we got Southern Seas and Panamax drills as well running, in addition to Amalgam Dart, Ardent Century, Vigilant Guard. But a way to break this down and to wrap up this Police State International posting intel drills, raids, and revolution, it's time for that revolution. It may not be televised, but it might be broadcast or podcast. Returning to Russia Today for more from Gerald Salente of Trends Research Institute. Salente said, what's next for the U.S.? Revolution.
Do you think the United States is going to learn anything from this experience? Will it transform into something else and better?
We're in the midst right now of the second American Revolution. We're going to have to see how it plays out. We're in the early stages of a revolution. We could go into a revolution or we could go into a renaissance. Both opportunities are there. The direction we see it going in the short term is revolution. From the revolution, however, we can go back. A renaissance is a rebirth. If we go back to the formula that worked the best in America, Main Street, not Wall Street. America went from the country that prided itself in quality number one, the bottom line. How can we make the most money, build it the cheapest, build it the biggest?
Let me follow up on your point about a revolution. For there to be a revolution, the majority of Americans, seems, needs to get really fed up. Meanwhile, however, we're seeing that many Americans are still very much enticed with their president. What's your take on this?
America's a first, second, and third world country. Revolutions don't happen from the people that are going to be watching American Idol or waste their time away playing video games and their minds lost in celebrity culture, pop culture. It's going to come from a different area. You have people from both ends of the spectrum, on the far right and the far left, becoming anti-Obama. On the far right, you know, it's the gun-toting America firsters And there's racism involved in it, too. Let's not be blind to that. That's on one aspect. On the left, you have the core that Obama brought in that are now pulling away from him. And these are the people that were against more troops in Afghanistan, against strikes into Pakistan, into other sovereign countries. These were the people that wanted to see the military shrink, not grow by 4%. So he's losing his core base on the left. So the revolution in many different areas, because Obama's backtracking on a lot of core issues that were very important to the left. So he's losing the left and he's lost the right, never had it to begin with. So the revolution is now being fought by a number of different factions within both the Republican and Democratic Party. And that's what's going to make this revolution happen.
Do you predict a second term for Barack Obama?
It's too early to tell now. As I was mentioning earlier about President Bush being down in the polls 50% in September of 2001. And then all of a sudden 9/11 happened. And the people rallied behind him. So from a president that people looked upon as someone incompetent, he became a president that led the country into two wars, by the way, for fake reasons. So you can't tell whether it's a terrorist attack, whether it's an act of nature or an act of man. You don't know what will happen by 2012. However, the way the trends are going now, I want to make that clear, the way they're going now, and nobody can predict the future, there are too many wild cards thrown on the deck. President Obama will be not only a one-term president, but will also see the emergence of a third party. Because many Americans, the independents, which account for more than the party members, and either the Republicans and the Democrats, want a third way. So we may see a new third party emerge by 2012, which we're calling Progressive Libertarian. So that's what we see more than a question of Obama versus the Republicans, because who are the Republicans are going to put up? Another nobody that no one wants. America's a country where people vote for a lesser of two evils. It's a two-headed, one-party system.
That's just a little bit of the nearly 12-minute-long interview with Gerald Celente by RussiaToday.com. Again, Gerald Celente of Trends Research. I believe it's TrendsResearch.com. One of the very few to accurately predict the econo crash. Not only that, but that it would happen in September 2008. That, coupled with a lot of his other analysis, puts us in a pretty precarious position, people. And that's when the drugs kicked in. It's time for, as the late great Bill Hicks would say, a positive drug story. But we put it under the econo crash heading, Yes We Cannabis! Americans grow cannabis to beat the recession. Again, going to the foreign press to get the breakdown from The Guardian. Some people cancel holidays abroad. Others stage yard sales or start shopping at low-cost supermarkets. To that list must now be added a new way to get through economic hard times, grow cannabis. Or as Jelly Biafra would say, grow more pot. Law enforcers on the west coast of the U.S. and in the middle states, straddled by the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, are reporting a common trend. It is boom time for marijuana cultivation, and much of the incentive, they say, is to beat the recession. So far this year, police in parts of the country where cannabis is traditionally grown have chopped down plants with a street value of $12 billion. The core growing areas are in California, Washington, and Oregon to the west, but the Appalachian states of Kentucky, Tennessee, and good old almost heaven, West Virginia, are also witnessing an explosion. So good on Oregon and West Virginia. Yes, we cannabis. As I went over in my recent interview with Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com, there aren't a lot of simple fixes, and you've probably heard me say this on the show as well, But two of the amazing moves we could make to literally change the world would be, one, remove corporate personhood, brought to us by a Skull and Bonesman. And number two would be, as we said, grow more pot. The rest of the EconoCrash headlines here. Blockbusted breadlines. Dollar pessimism highest in 18 months. That's from Bloomberg. Blockbuster's video to close up to 960 stores. With some of the things that we won't miss with the EconoCrash, as we've noted, deadmalls.com. I won't miss Blockbuster Video, and I think it's a great example of when someone comes up with a new, better idea, such as Netflix, things like Blockbuster hit the skids. They're not going bankrupt by any stretch. They're just restructuring. But again, don't give them your money. On an historic day, Obama warns of financial collapse. This, again, from PressTV.ir. 1 year after the start of the financial crisis in the U.S., Obama warns of complacency that might lead the country to an economic standstill. Speaking last Monday in the U.S. financial hub, Wall Street, to mark the first anniversary of the latest U.S. economic downturn, sparked, of course, by the collapse of one of America's oldest commercial banks, Lehman Brothers. Obama called for an imminent launch of regulatory bodies in order to implement effective oversight of America's yada yada blobbity bloomling. More of the same. We hit last week. Obama making depression mistakes. Again, that was from the foreign press, though. Washington's blog going into why Obama isn't breaking up the insolvent banks. Furthermore, asking the question and answering it, we can't break up the giant banks, can we? Yes, we can. Thank you, Satan. Chorus Bank seized deposits bought by MB Financial. That's from Bloomberg. That's from last FDIC Friday. I'm sure we'll see more this Friday as the banksters collapse, or at least the buildings that they give us inflated usurious money. H.R. 1207, Ron Paul's audit the Fed bill, is now veto-proof, my friends. There's also the related Senate bill, but just Google it, audit the Fed. I've called up the office of the aforementioned Democrat rep from Portland, Earl Blumenauer. He doesn't want to audit the Fed. And finally, on this EconoCrash post, yes, we cannabis plus blockbusted breadlines. One more return to RussiaToday.com for a quick clip from Peter Schiff, another noted economist who actually knows what's going on with the funny money, Federal Reserve, Ponzi scheme, bankster bailouts, TARPs, and Goldman Sachs. Peter Schiff says Americans must prepare for deepening unemployment, inflation, and possibly breadlines.
Many prominent businessmen and speculators here in the United States, including George Soros, have come out saying that the biggest concern over America's economy is that eventually this country will collapse like the Soviet Union did.
The Soviet Union certainly collapsed for many of the reasons that we're in trouble. They simply, the government was too big. They spent a lot of money they didn't have maintaining an empire around the world. And ultimately, they couldn't control that empire because they ran out of funds. The United States, we support an empire of sorts. We have a huge military presence around the world that we can't afford because we're borrowing the money. Our government has promised tremendous entitlements to American citizens that it can't afford. We've also borrowed money from the rest of the world that we can't afford to repay. So we're basically broke, and I don't think the U.S. government can afford to maintain this empire hopefully we don't, you know, see a similar fate in that the United States breaks apart, that states decide they want to leave the Union. If things get bad, if we can continue on this path, and if the U.S. government continues to make these mistakes, continues to increase the deficit spending, keeps bailing companies up, propping companies up, and raises taxes to finance it, I can see movements beginning in various American states to get out from under it.
There you have it. All the latest on the econo crash, or the new financial world order, if you like. Now 1 year in. Happy anniversary, new financial world order. We still have several posts left on episode 141 of MediaMonarchy.com. And this relates to the econo crash. I find this very interesting. Is this the equivalent of Wall Street banksters jumping out of windows? There have been many suspicious deaths lately. The first post, two suspicious deaths surrounding banksters and Blagojevich. First from Bloomberg, indicted financier Danny Pang dies in California. Danny Pang, P-A-N-G, founder of Private Equity Management Group Incorporated, who U.S. investors, or rather who U.S. regulators claim bilked Taiwanese investors. He died on 9/11/09. He was 42. Pang was taken from his Newport Beach, California home to Hogue Hospital in the afternoon of 9/11 by paramedics who had responded to a call from the house. Charles Sipkins, a Pang family spokesman, confirmed the death and declined to comment further. Pang's lawyer, James Riddett, wasn't available. Pang, who was free on $1 million bail, pleaded not guilty on July 27th to charges in a separate criminal case that he structured cash withdrawals to avoid having to report to them. He was charged in an indictment with two counts of making a total of about 50 withdrawals in amounts as high as $9,900 to evade a U.S. law that requires reporting cash withdrawals of $10,000 or more. Again, something Richard Grove went over in my recent interview with him. So that's the death of Danny Pang. There are many links in there to Reuters as well as the Wall Street Journal, and it doesn't really get into the circumstances of his death. However, the next case of a suspicious death, this from the Chicago Tribune, Christopher Kelly, a key figure in the recently disgraced, deposed Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. Christopher Kelly, key figure in the Blagojevich corruption probe, is also dead.
This is developing now, a political bombshell. A key figure in the corruption case against Rod Blagojevich is dead. Good evening. I'm Byron Harmon.
And I'm Nancy Pender. It's a story you saw first on Fox. Christopher Kelly, pronounced dead at Stroger Hospital.
Tonight, what killed him and the implications for the case against Rod Blagojevich. Team coverage now. Steve Shamraz is outside the medical examiner's office at Harrison and 11. Steve.
Byron and Nancy, according to a spokesperson for the Cook County Hospital System, Chris Kelly spent the final 12 hours of his life under the care of doctors in two different Cook County hospitals. At one point, he was even alert and, to use a word from that spokesperson, stable. These are just two elements in a mysterious chain of events that ultimately ends with the death of Chris Kelly. Doctors at Stroger Hospital went to work on Chris Kelly at 5:15 this morning, almost 6 hours after he fell ill. It was around 11:15 last night that Kelly was found in a lumber yard in far south suburban Country Club Hills. He was then rushed to Oak Forest Hospital, also in the southwest suburbs. A spokesperson for the county hospital system says Kelly's condition at Oak Forest was stable, then worsened. Kelly was then rushed by private ambulance to Stroger on the city's west side. After 5 hours, attempts to save the 51-year-old's life failed. Kelly was pronounced dead at 10:46 this morning. The investigation into Kelly's death is now in the hands of Cook County's medical examiner. A spokesperson says an autopsy is scheduled for tomorrow when a cause of death will be determined. But several published reports say Kelly's death was consistent with an overdose of aspirin. While no one in law enforcement or from the Cook County hospital system will say it, all indications do point towards a suicide. However, law enforcement is not treating that as such. Chicago Police, Illinois State Police, Country Club Hills Police, and here the medical examiner, they are all launching investigations into exactly how Chris Kelly died. The next big piece of information we can expect in that investigation, of course, is the autopsy scheduled here tomorrow. Live on the west side of the city, Steve Shamraz, Fox Chicago News.
All right, Steve, thank you for
the part that jumps out the most at me there, and the mysterious death of Chris Kelly, key figure in the Blagojevich corruption probe, is that he was transferred to a second hospital with a private ambulance. But then it didn't stop. Two more suspicious deaths just a day later, 48 hours essentially. Rockefeller chief James McDonald dies in apparent suicide. This from Bloomberg. James McDonald, chief executive officer of New York investment firm Rockefeller & Company, died Sunday from a single gunshot wound that was probably self-inflicted. Goes into the Rockefeller family and all their connections. The fourth one. Former beneficial CEO Finn Kasperson dies in apparent suicide.
We have breaking news just into the Eyewitness Newsroom. The Westerly Police Department has confirmed they are investigating the death of international financial giant Finn Kasperson. Investigators say Kasperson has been found dead inside his Westerly home. His body was reportedly discovered Monday after they were asked to perform a well-being check. Kasperson worked for a beneficial corporation where he served as chairman and CEO before retiring. Westerly police are not saying if foul play is suspected.
The update there is that Kasperson may have hidden millions of dollars abroad in lots of hidden private offshore places. That's from the New York Times, and the flashback goes back to... No, rather, I misspoke. That just connects us to the other two mysterious deaths surrounding banksters and Blagojevich. But it didn't stop there. It continued. Wednesday... Key witness in federal passport fraud case fatally shot. This from the Washington Times. A key witness in a federal probe into passport information stolen from the State Department was fatally shot in front of a district church, the Metropolitan Police Department said. Lieutenant Quarles Harris Jr., who had been cooperating with a federal investigator, was found late Thursday night slumped dead inside a car. Emergency medics pronounced him dead at the scene. What this relates to? Oh, and interestingly enough, they found him thanks to a shot spotter, which is a fancy name for microphones and devices that listen to you. But this relates to what originally broke April 5th, that contractors for the State Department had improperly accessed passport info for presidential candidates Hillary, Barack, and John. You remember that story? And I believe this kind of connects back to what I said earlier and just the swirling of stories surrounding the rise of Obama and everything being hacked. Everything's imminently hackable. I think it's going to be a central meme. And again, that's why I started cyberspacewar.com to track all these events and watching for the prep and the unleashing of an I-9-11. And again, Richard Clark, Lawrence Lessig, and others have pointed out that there's already an I-Patriot Act sitting on the shelf, just waiting for some catalyzing, catastrophic event to happen to the web. Quickly, though, to geopolitics, shoe-throwing, missile shields, and sanctions. Again, remember this? The Iraqi who threw his shoes at Bush, he has now been released from prison, and surprise, surprise, he was tortured. More on that from MSNBC, as well as the Los Angeles Times, and the flashback on MediaMonarchy.com going back to December of 2008. Seems so much longer ago than that. Shoes thrown at Bush in protest of final visit to Iraq. A big story, and one that we didn't really spend any time on this week. It all has yet to shake out on who's betraying who and what's defending what. Obama scraps Bush's European missile defense plan. That's from the Associated Press, from the Washington Post. Obama to scrap European missile shield. U.S. expected to cancel missile shield in Europe. But from the BBC, Russia hails U.S. missile overhaul. And interestingly enough, this all came again, as we noted from FDR earlier, if anything happens in politics, you can bet it was planned that way. Why did this announcement come on the day that it did? Dear Poland, happy Soviet Invasion Day. Love, Uncle Sam. That day, of course, marks the anniversary of the Russian invasion of Poland, even though they were already battling the Nazis.
Shelving missile shield, another step in U.S.-Russia reset. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Russian president hints at U-turn over Iran sanctions. That's from Times Online. And I believe something that blew past my radar on the front of Google News this morning is that essentially, I believe it's the Polish newspaper Fakt, F-A-K-T, is that essentially they see it as a sellout. Obama sold us out to Russia for an exchange on a ratcheting up of the saber rattling against Iran. Again, it's all the grand chessboard. It's playing both ends against the middle. It's the proxy wars. Nuke agency says Iran can make a bomb. That's from Reuters. Ex-intel officer discloses U.S. plans for Pakistan. That's from Press TV. Blackwater involved in Bhutto and Hariri hits, so says former Pakistani army chief. That's from Tehran Times. And a little bit of a shift here from newsobserver.com. Panel says to admit illegal aliens to college. This comes out of North Carolina. From examiner.com, U.S. invades Somalia. I don't have time to fully flesh that out, but according to the Associated Press, witnesses have spotted U.S. troops invading the town of Barar, Somalia, near Mogadishu. Spelled out, the war on terror has found a new home front. The last note here on geopolitics, and we've hit it before, but we'll hit it again, just to kind of sink in the message or to catapult the propaganda, as Bush would say. The 1.2 billion person population of India are all set to get biometric identification cards. That is from The Guardian. And after all that bad news, after all those horrible things that, again, you're only empowered with the information, you can only use that to arm yourself and make better decisions about what's going on. I feel like I can do the steam valve and let you off the hook a little bit, let a little steam off in the way that we can only get from satire. U.S. condemned for preemptive use of Hillary Clinton against Pakistan.
Pakistani officials are expressing outrage following what many in the international community are calling the brutal and unjustified use of Hillary Clinton against their nation. Secretary of State Clinton hit Islamabad at approximately 9 a.m. yesterday, and most civilians were starting their workday or attending morning prayers. Just hours after Clinton arrived, the UN released a statement condemning the United States, saying, quote, under no circumstances is there ever a justification for the preemptive deployment of Hillary Clinton anywhere by any country. Joining us now is Pakistan's ambassador to the United States, Hassam Amdiri. Thank you for being here, Mr. Ambassador. Preliminary figures we have here showing over 500 civilians suffered the full force of Mrs. Clinton, and over 1,000 more may have suffered some exposure to her inflexible hair and pseudo-folksy hand gestures.
It's horrible. Innocent women and even children had to endure her stiffly rehearsed stories about farmers she met who inspired her. She was even sent into a hospital.
That's awful.
Mr. Obama clearly regards our people as beneath human dignity to have unleashed such a woman upon us.
The Red Cross has set up camps just across the Afghan border for the tens of thousands of refugees who fled their homes to avoid Ms. Clinton.
They were the
right?
lucky ones. Many more were trapped inside the Clintonized area and could not escape her clumsy attempts to relate
so
to them.
So people were caught completely unaware.
I'm afraid so. The Hillary Clinton warning sirens sounded just a few minutes before she hit. It was too late for most people. They had to endure her cacophonous fake laughter.
Sir, I'm just getting word that the White House has released the following statement. We reserve the right to use Hillary Clinton in situations where all other options have failed. Mr. Ambassador, this sounds like a threatening tone.
It is horrible. The world must unite against this act of naked aggression. Let 1,000 Hillary Clintons rain down upon those responsible for this.
All right, Mr. Amdiri, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Intelligence reports have indicated that Pakistan is developing its own Hillary Clinton and that Anita Alvey, a stiff, humorless provincial representative, could be ready to use against a major U.S. city as soon as 2011.
If only everything were all that funny. And as I glance one last time at Google News on this September 18th, 2009, it's geopolitics all the way. Eastern European officials say U.S. betrayed us, again referring to the missile defense system. Israeli-Palestinian peace talk deal eludes Obama envoy. And again, further on the international race war and Ahmadinejad and the Holocaust myth. Didn't have time to do it last week into the 9/11 anniversary show, so we'll do it quickly here. Creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past 2 weeks. I track some of the more interesting private, military, and governmental visitors to MediaMonarchy.com and post them up for you here. Oh, well, just speaking of, the Virginia Holocaust Museum out of Richmond, Virginia. They Googled television under the swastika. We had General Electric out of Connecticut, Boeing out of Chicago, Coca-Cola out of Atlanta, the CBC out of Ottawa, Mazda Motor out of Irvine, California, Amoco out of Tulsa, the National Park Service out of D.C., Lockheed Martin out of Denver, the Department of the Interior out of Aurora, Colorado, the West Virginia Department of Education in Charleston, West Virginia, FEMA, Navy Network Information Center, J.P. Morgan Chase, and the 754th Electronic Systems Group out of Montgomery, Alabama, Googling, what is Ardent Century? And if you don't know, you better Google it too, my friends. This has been episode 141 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 18th, 2009. My name's James Evan-Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and shows MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com, imploring you, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.